Hello and welcome to Coach in Your Corner, powered by Last 20 Sports Conditioning. The goal of this podcast is to show you everything you need to know about sports conditioning. We'll be talking with current players, current coaches, physios, nutrition specialists, and anyone that can help you to become the athlete that you want to be. This week, we're speaking with Jack Braniff from Box Nutrition. He's a registered sports nutritionist and specialises in metabolic testing for performance and weight loss. You can find him on Instagram at box_nutrition.
Hey, Jack.
How's things, James? You well?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Just getting by, like most people at the moment. Every day is the same at the moment.
Yeah, it's getting into Groundhog Day a bit, but we've had some positive news recently, so start getting a bit of that plan in place.
Gyms are open soon. That's the most important thing.
How have you found lockdown then anyway? What have you sort of been doing during lockdown and sort of dive into what you do as well? So what sort of bits you cover in with Box Nutrition and how you've been trying to do that through lockdown?
So I run obviously Box Nutrition. I think I've always been a sports nutritionist. I guess that's the business. But a couple of years ago, I got more into the testing. And funnily enough, that took the front seat really just because it did really well. But then obviously with lockdown, I had to completely stop that, which is a bit of a kick in the teeth. But having the online side of things, that's really helped, being able to work from home. So it hasn't actually been all that bad. And don't get me wrong, it's never a great situation. But I think my other half as well, she's had to work from home. And it's actually not that bad, like having the dogs. It makes you just, I don't know, appreciate what you do have sometimes, that you don't have to go to the office and you can kind of sit at home, you can walk the dogs for longer, spend more time with your girlfriend. It's not always good, but it's actually not that bad, to be honest. It's I've been okay.
Yeah, I found it quite similar, to be honest. It was a big change at the start. I had to get a lot of things in place, but yeah, if you've got those goals to work towards, you can actually find that a lot of it is more positive. I think in my previous job, I was working maybe 18 hours a day sometimes, so you just stop seeing everyone. So it's quite nice to have that moment, that refresh, and just start connecting with people again, which is something we've done, like getting these web chats in as well has helped massively with just connecting with more people. I'd never used to have the time to just sit and talk through things like this before.
Oh, absolutely. I think you're right about having, say, something else to focus on. And before, you used to get into that kind of mindset of, like, you had to go to the gym, you had to do this. Whereas I think now it gives you that opportunity to look at something a bit, like, different. So, again, like, for me, I'm probably doing running now, whereas before I wasn't doing much at all. So it's all, a lot of that has changed as well. So you're right.
Yeah, I've found more time for running, actually. It used to be something I always shied away from because I just didn't really like it too much. But when we've got that hour you want to get out of the house, it's quite nice. It's sort of given me an excuse to do it. And now I've gone, oh, actually, not too bad to go out for a run.
It's true. I think so many people, like you say, it gives you that purpose in a way in the morning, or it's almost meditative in a way that it gives you that time. And for me, I'm quite lucky that I live just outside of Birmingham, but we've got kind of the parks near us. And it gives me that time to, say, spend an hour away from the house, away from kind of thinking about anything else apart from that. And it gives you that almost escapism, which is what you need in times like this, I think.
Yeah. How have you kept yourself accountable then? How have you kept yourself doing all those bits during lockdown?
I think having that structure, I think that's the most important thing. I think for the same with, like, nutrition clients, when I used to have those, it's just, well, with my nutrition clients, it's giving them some sort of structure. It's the same for me. So before, you used to go to work and you used to have breakfast before you used to go to work. You used to have coffee breaks where you might go and buy a coffee. Whereas when you end up, like, working in your kitchen, it's so easy just to go to the kitchen, have a biscuit, have a cake or something like that. So it's having that structure in place regardless of where you are. I think that's the big thing. And again, with the exercises, having that kind of purpose or focus that even though I'm not a runner or I'm not kind of a cyclist, by doing the running every morning or kind of working towards something like that, it makes it a lot easier. Turn my notifications off. Can you hear those beeps?
I just heard the last one then. Typical working from home life, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. The post will go soon. The dog will start barking, just wait. I think that's
I found that bit quite refreshing, though, because usually you are stuck in, like, I was stuck in an office, or if I was out doing bits, you're just stuck in that thing. But now you have got those little interruptions in the day. The postman rocks up with something or things like that. I found that quite fun and quite...
Oh, absolutely. And I think I've had some meetings with people as well. And you'd almost, like, look up to them in a way. And whilst I'm having quite a serious conversation with them, their wife might put their head through the door and say, do you want a cup of tea? It's like, it's a bit of a leveler, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does that. As you're saying, with the cup of tea and the biscuits, like, Just like, oh, yeah, I'll have one of those. And it's quite nice just having that. How's it affected your eating, same with the biscuits and stuff? Is it, have you found yourself snacking more, or have you found that getting that structure in place has kept you on track?
If I'm honest, the first lockdown was a lot easier, I think, because when it, last year, it was really hot, it was warm, and I think I really got into that, the motivation, well, I really got into kind of the fitness and kind of eating really well. I got in really good shape, to be fair. I do think the this time round, where it's a bit darker, and I think in general, in the winter, like, nutrition tends to be not quite as good, and I found it a little bit harder this time. I haven't been able to get out as much because I got injured with the running, so I had to cycle, and I didn't have a turbo until like the end of the year, so it's not having that purpose with the exercise, like, negatively impacted my nutrition. So I think to begin with, it was great. Kind of slacked off a bit, but again, now the new year's here, I think it's I'm back to normal, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I found it a little bit hard to get that push, as you say. I didn't gorge as much as I usually would at Christmas, and I think that threw me, because then I wasn't like, right, I need to get healthy again. I was sort of just in that limbo zone. And yeah, I've managed to get back into it this month, luckily. Just, and that little bit of motivation in the gym's open as well. Now I'm like, right, now I've got a sort of target to get myself ready so I can start lifting some heavy stuff again. And
it seems to work towards, isn't it? I think I'm not a drinker, I'm not a big drinker at all. Oh, and it was just things, I was getting to that habit of I'd have a beer or a glass of wine after every day. And it was just such a stupid thing that I never used to do. And then I had to have kind of a bit of a word for myself this year after Christmas, like, come on, Jack, this isn't really like you. But you were so habitual and so normal to do something like that. Whereas before, I had these, I've created bad habits rather than always good habits.
Talking with habits, sort of, do you do meal plans and tracking to keep those habits in shape, or are you sort of, have you done that in the past and now you really sort of use the knowledge and bit of intuition to get your eating right?
Yeah, it's a tough one, really. I think it's all well and good saying, be intuitive, that's the way forward, but a lot of the time the reason why people are out of shape or eating poorly is because of their intuition. So with my guys, I really like to use things like planning and tracking to give them the tools to understand food value. So if you track for a few weeks, you're going to understand how much protein is in a certain food, how much carbohydrates are in, say, pasta and potatoes. And once you've got that knowledge, that's when you can be more intuitive. You can start thinking, oh, actually, I know this is probably a fairly good snack before I play rugby. Or if I'm trying to lose weight, I intuitively know that this is going to be slightly lower in calories. So I like both. I think you just got to know when to use them.
Yeah, I think I find a lot, I always try and get it in first with sort of the teaching side of it. So teaching people the calorie value of certain things and making sure they know it, getting them into a sort of tracking for a month or so. And then if they're ready to, then getting them off of it, because it does become the thing that gets in the way. I find with a lot of people, just, you've got to put in 7 different ingredients and weigh them and put all that in, and get people start just using it as an excuse. But as you say, some people do actually need that there, and it does help. So it's sort of finding what works for the right person.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. It really depends on the person, because still, I've got clients I've worked with for a few years now, and they still track everything. But that's what they like to do. And there's no point me saying to them, oh, yeah, it's obsessive, this is stupid. It works for them. Whereas if some people, like you say, they can't stand it, get them to use it for when they need it, but then move to something like portion control, like your hands, or just say, like, how much of it on your plate? It's just, you don't have to necessarily track in terms of my fitness pal, but you still have to have an understanding of portion control, because ultimately that's what gets results.
Yeah, what's your best method for portion control? What do you use? Is it like the Eat Well plate or something like that?
Again, every question you're going to ask today, it depends. But I think my fitness pal is always a good start. But I tend to, so what I tend to do normally is, like, if I give someone a basic framework, I'll just split that up into the main meal, so they roughly know how many carbohydrates, proteins and fats have with each meal. So it's 50 grams carbohydrates, 20, 30 grams of protein, 50 grams of fats. So that's like a starting point, because then just get an understanding when they're tracking it. They don't have to follow it for each meal. Totals matter more, but it just gives them a bit of a, when they're putting their meals together, oh, we should probably look about this big. But then when you're working more with, say, athletes, I prefer more of the, say, high demand, low demand, medium demand. So high demand is high carb, low demand is lower carb, medium demand is like a normal day. So if you had like match day or match day plus one, match day minus one, you'd have more high demand meals. So they just know, right, I need to have higher carb, and it'd be a half the plate would be starchy carbs, whereas a moderate demand plate would be like a third of the plate.
Okay, nice. So looking at athletes as well, what should we be eating for the separate sort of things? So as an endurance athlete, or then maybe as like a team sport, like high impact rugby player, should we be changing it up on those days? Would you still use the high impact things for that?
Yeah, good question. I think with endurance, a lot of the time it's not just about, well, it is about fueling, but you've got to balance fueling with also body composition / weight. So people like runners and cyclists, we know that weight matters, especially runners like BMI. You wouldn't use that for, say, a rugby player because everyone's going to be obese. But for runners, we know that especially long distance guys, if they're lighter, they're going to run faster, or they're not going to need to as much energy or oxygen whilst they're running, so running economy. But then you've also got to balance that with fueling. And for the majority of, say, like endurance sports, it's going to be using more carbohydrates. So there are exceptions. If you do something like ultra distance and you're Ironman, you probably could use more fat. But really, you're going to have to make sure that you have enough carbohydrates for their sessions, but then also making sure they're not going to overeat so they don't get fat, because that's going to also slow them down. And when it comes to your team sports, especially rugby, you'll know it's about winning the collision or winning the contact. And if you're trying to always think about body composition, it's not going to be good. And this is where you have to, it's not just about positional requirements anymore, I think, with rugby. I think it's more about the individual, whereas, because it's, I guess, not merging into one, but if you look at Manu, his nutrition strategy is going to be very different to, say, someone like, I don't know, Gaskell, you know, the second row for Wasps. Yeah. Gaskell's probably have to do whatever he can to keep weight on, whereas someone like Manu, he needs to do everything he can to not put too much weight on. So I think this is where you're going to have the same principles in place. So for team sports or contact sports, high protein, making sure you've got plenty of fuel for your training session. But a lot of it is going to be on not losing mass throughout the season, because essentially, well, that's going to happen with rugby. And then for each of those players, you're going to have losers who are, well, say losers, people are going to lose weight, and you're going to have players which can eat a chicken breast and get massive. So it's become so individual nowadays.
Yeah, it's something I hear quite a lot from people. It's always a thing with rugby is that you need to put the size on. And it's, in some ways it is true. You do need that bit of size, but a lot of the time it comes down to power. Yeah. And obviously having that size there is going to help with that, but it can also hinder it quite a lot. The biggest guys aren't always the most powerful on the pitch. So, and also it can hinder it quite a lot. If you're running around with all that extra weight, by the time you get 10 minutes in, you're actually knackered. So you're not actually powerful anyway.
Absolutely. And I've had a few of the guys that are testing, a few kind of ex-pros come in. And some of them, I've had a few, don't want to say names, but he was a front row, he used to be at Worcester. And he's only about 86 kilos now. He's a front row. And he was having to put on so much weight and hold that weight and just causing all these injury problems. And I think this is where, I don't know enough about it really, but is kind of the game changing more in, say New Zealand compared to here, where it might be more about, or here it's very much about the gym culture, I guess, it's about kind of getting big, getting strong. Whereas maybe in New Zealand, it's more about, like, say, power development, how you're moving, more about technical ability. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot more skill-based in the Southern Hemisphere. They start including a lot more of the skills earlier on. A lot of them are playing sort of on size base rather than age, which I think is something that works on a safety aspect, but also maybe on a skills development and learning has changed it. But particularly with rugby, it's now, when I started, it was really, this is your position because you're the tallest, you're the biggest, whatever. That's the position you're going to play for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But I started in the second row because I was the tallest. And as soon as I got to adult rugby, I didn't want to play there for one. And yeah, started playing in the backs. So if I'd been pushed all that time, I'd have ended up just sitting in the forwards, not really doing what I wanted to do. But it's something that's coming now that kids are just being put in all positions at youth rugby, trying them out. I had a guy that come in, started at prop, moved to 8, he did bits at 10, at 15. He played all the positions by the time he's 16. And then he goes, I've developed the skills by doing that. And also I know where I want to play now. I've not been told by a dad or a coach or something that you should play here because I did when I was your age.
Yeah, and I think you look at the skill sets of now, all these rugby players, everyone's like as good as, well, say as good to an extent. Everyone can pass now, whereas before, like when I used to play as well, your front row couldn't pass. It was their job, was to just kind of go forward. Whereas now you've got everyone can pass with both hands. So it's, yeah, it's good to see.
Jumping back to the nutrition then, so looking at how we can keep weight on and also looking at the meal plans, is supplements something you recommend, particularly protein supplements and weight gain supplements like that? Or is it so you really try and get that diet in right first?
Yeah, I think like you said, I think it's important to get the diet right first. But the problem with, say, especially when you're bigger athletes, is getting those protein, that protein in from real food. It can be challenging, and having kind of chicken breasts all the time is difficult. And something like a protein shake, it's cost effective and it's convenient. So adding it to, say, some oats in the morning, or say adding it some Greek yogurt before you go to bed, it's just an easy way to bolster protein. So I think it's there for a purpose, but I don't think it's really important to get rid of it. And it's the same for carbohydrates as well. I guess less so for team sports and rugby, but especially endurance guys. If you're looking to get like 7 grams per kilo of carbohydrates per day of body weight, try and get that from like clean sources. You're going to have like mountains of sweet potato. It just doesn't work. And that's where stuff like energy gels, carbohydrate drinks have a place. So I think it's with supplements, supplement a good diet, get that right. But I think, again, so many people spend like 100 quid a month at MyProtein. If you put that into, say, getting better quality meat, this type of stuff, you're probably going to see a better result from doing that. But then if you're going to be an elite, if you're looking for those 1%ers, say taking things like your bicarbs or say beta-alanine, creatine, they are going to make a small difference. So like you said, get the basics right first. Eat a good diet, and then just supplement on top with some of the other supplements.
Yeah, I think that's a great tip for probably most people listening to this, and most people in general. Actually, spend that extra bit of money that you're spending on your supplements on just better quality ingredients, and having the time to cook some good food, because you'll enjoy the food better, for one, which will keep your motivation and discipline up on your training program. You're not spending all that money relying on the supplements, because you see a lot of people go, I've done my gym work and I drank a protein shake. Why haven't I not got bigger? you didn't eat any carbs today and you ate 20 bags of crisps. So you need to have that diet right first. And then when you want to start pushing the numbers, once you've got that in there, that's when the supplements can start coming in and pushing that bit further. Once you've hit the good level, plateaued a little bit, start bringing them in then.
Exactly. I always talk about that kind of scaling your diet, where we start with looking at the basics, so things like eating more veg, drinking more water, these types of things. Then it's like looking at your totals, and then you want to start looking at, say, things like timings, micronutrient values, supplementation. But before that, you just got to, like say, cover the basics.
Yeah, it's a big thing with pre-workout as well. A lot of people are like, I haven't got the energy to train, so I'll just get pre-workout. And like, well, what did you eat today?
sleep's terrible. I wonder why that is, because you're smashing Jack 3D at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah. Is pre-workout something you use or recommend with athletes, or is it something you just sort of steer clear, just have a coffee and things like that?
I think they can have a place, but you just got to understand what goes in them, and often it is the caffeine, which is the important ingredient to give that energy. So you can spend 40 quid in a pre-workout, you can get caffeine tablets for a fiver, and as long as you know how to dose it properly, you're fine. But on the flip side, you said yourself that caffeine's probably going to have a more of a negative effect on your sleep training in the evening, and that's going to have a knock-on effect to training overall. So you've got to think about when you're going to have it. So if you're going to be training in the morning, yeah, great, have double espresso, having some caffeine tablets. But if you're going to be training in the evening and you know that affects your sleep, it's probably best just to fuel correctly. And you said yourself, eating properly, again, I know I keep bringing back to endurance, but it's the same for rugby. If you eat a proper meal the night before your game, or if you eat a proper breakfast, you fuel correctly, if you fuel on the bike, it's like doping. You feel so much better if you know how much, if you're eating properly. And people start doing all this fasted gym work and fasted sessions, like starve themselves when they're training and then eat loads in the evening. And they wonder why they feel shit on the bike. And it's like, do the other way around. Like, fuel your workouts correctly, and then you can pull food back later on in the day.
Yeah, it's a big thing. I used to do it with caffeine, like energy drinks and stuff, after working a long day, go to the gym in the evening and have a can of Monster, and then you don't sleep. You only get 5 hours sleep, and then you're doing the same thing every few days. And you wonder, one, you're not improving because you're not getting the recovery time from the sleep. And then from the lack of sleep, you start getting more stressed. Your mood starts disappearing because you're just not getting the sleep and not recovering properly. And then all your actual progression just vanishes anyway.
That's it.
What sort of food, and how can food sort of help with recovery and injuries specifically as well?
Yeah, I think, I guess from an injury perspective, when we talk about someone does get injured, the most important thing usually is to retain muscle mass. So what we try and do is just kind of throw everything into the mix to keep muscle. So increase protein, obviously add creatine as well. Omega-3s, you don't have to take supplementation, but just lots of oily fish, these types of foods as well. Like, you just want to do what you can to increase protein synthesis. And even though it might have just a small effect, you might as well just throw the kitchen sink at it because you're injured. I think that's always been my approach to if you are injured. I think there's also, have you heard of like gelatin or not? What's quite recent with that? So there's what's quite popular the last couple of years is we call like vitamin C enriched gelatin. And you can see some of the collagen shops, but the gelatin, you get it from the supermarket. So you can get like, make your own jelly from like Dr. Oetker's gelatin powder. When I say enriched with vitamin C, you can just put, say, like some berries with it or some squash or some cordial. Literally boiling water with some gelatin powder, put some berries in there, put it in the fridge. And what you do is you have this before like a primer workout. So again, let's use rugby as an example. If you've got like a shoulder injury, you would have like this, the jelly about an hour before you would do like a really easy exercise, like banded workouts for the shoulder. And it helps kind of develop or improve kind of soft tissues. So things like soft tissue injuries, so ligament problems, tendon problems. So it's essentially, it's improving collagen synthesis. And that's getting a lot of traction at the moment. So that's definitely something worth looking into. So twice, three times per week, have about 15 grams of jelly and berries or vitamin C before these primer workouts. That's quite a big one at the moment.
So jumping in quickly of how food can help. So obviously we're looking at sort of all the keto stuff coming up at the moment, these low carb diets, and so how food can really affect it. What are your thoughts and opinions on the keto craze? And then secondly, can you give us a bit more information on why that is? I know obviously you do quite a lot of the metabolic work, and looking at the testing, so you're probably really well placed to tell us the facts around it all.
Yeah, I think I don't want to start being too dogmatic on either side. It's so easy to say, yeah, keto shit, it's just stupid. But then if you look at all these people, a lot of people do see success in it. And you've got the almost like the evidence-based crowd now. They're just as dogmatic as, say, some of the keto advocates. So I think, like you just said, you've got to understand the rationale behind it. Now, going super low carb is often, it just helps with creating that calorie deficit. So it's not that keto is magical. I think that we know that the kind of the insulin hypothesis is debunked, really. But if you're going to cut out things like pies, pastries, sweets, cakes, biscuits, you're naturally going to reduce how much you eat. So that becomes like an automatically calorie control method. And that's the reason why a lot of lower carbohydrates work. I think in terms of keto, you've got to look at from a health perspective, it's going to have effects on kind of bone health. You're starting to see that. You're probably going to you can be okay with it, but also just your lack of fiber, that's going to have a problem with gut health. And we know the knock-on effects of that too in terms of health and performance. So I think that's something that if you are going to do keto, you have to plan it properly. But then if you look at, say, some of your ultra-endurance guys now, a lot of them are adopting this super low carbohydrate, even keto diets, and doing very well with it. But this is where you have to think about energy demands or what does your sport or your activity need? And again, with the testing, I think what we can see is that as exercise intensity increases, your reliance, you start using carbohydrates as a fuel. So if you've kind of been to university or you've done anything about kind of energy systems, you'll know that you can use carbohydrates to create quick energy because simply there's not many processes involved in turning it to energy, whereas fat there is. So if you're going to be doing something like an intermittent sport like rugby, like CrossFit, you need quick energy. So that's going to have to come from carbohydrates. And this is almost the irony that loads of CrossFit people, because this is, I guess, I used to do a lot of nutrition for CrossFit, is they're doing kind of keto, but it's high intensity exercise. And that's when you need your carbohydrates. And the other problem, and I'm kind of rambling on a bit now, but one of the problems with going too low carb all the time, you actually inhibit your ability to use carbs as a fuel. So not only are you not having the carbs to work at high intensity, when you do pop them in, you can't use them properly. So I think this is where my advice, or what the way I like to see it, is almost match your food with what you're trying to do, which kind of makes sense that if you're going to do super long endurance where you're below your, we call it your aerobic threshold, where you're using more fatty acids, you could do low carb. But then if you're going to do rugby, if you're going to do CrossFit, if you're going to do football, you're going to be working, 85, 90% of your VO2 max, which is going to be relying all on carbohydrates. And even if you say fat adapted, it's, again, I know I'm waffling, but it's using fat is inefficient. So although you've got lots of fat on you, or fatty acids like circulating around your muscle, your adipose tissue, you need a lot of oxygen to convert it to energy. And that's inefficient because oxygen is our currency for energy. So there's only, we want to use as much as that, well, as little as that as possible to make you more economical.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were saying earlier, doesn't it? That it really does depend on the person. And I think the sort of fad social media craze of it has meant that everyone just wants to jump on board because it's the next thing, the next title. The same way the Atkins diet did it 15 years ago. Everyone jumped on it because they thought it was the next thing. But, and as you say, it's really got to depend on what you're doing. I've talked with a lot of people, and especially rugby players, and they're like, I'm on this diet. And I'm like, well, you're eating 20% carbs. You're trying to go out for three runs a week and you're trying to do three gym sessions a week, and then you're coming to me going, what supplement should I take to help my energy? I'm like, eat some more potatoes and eat some more pasta and get that carb.
Yeah, and I think it's the same with a lot of it. There's definitely a lot of merits to say going plant-based or vegan, but that's another one. It's almost because it's vegan and people say it's healthy or game change, I'm going to go vegan because it's going to be good for me. And they forget that you can be a bad vegan as well. You can just eat shit food all the time and crisps and stuff like that. But you can be plant-based, you can be vegan and do it quite well, but you've got to plan it and you have to put a lot of effort to do it properly. So it's not like you said, it's jumping on that. Oh, I'm going to do Keith. The amount, honestly, because I've been coaching people for a long time now, you speak to people who struggle with their diet, and so many times it's like, oh, I did keto last year, but now I'm doing vegan now. And it's like, you just go from one polar opposite to the other. So you clearly, it's not, it could be ethical, it might be, but often it's just jumping on what's new.
So how does our body sort of use those fuels? Because obviously, like, I've seen quite a few things recently of how we, like, some days we're using mainly carbs, some days we're using mainly fats. So what's the actual evidence behind it? How does our body use fuel? And people say you can train the body to use the fat. What is the actual fat behind that?
Yeah, so if to do that much oxygen you take on board, so at low intensities, because you've got enough or you're consuming enough oxygen, you will use fatty acids. However, when you start increasing intensity, what happens is that, because it's a continuum though, it doesn't suddenly switch off. So you're going to start playing on kind of different energy systems. But as intensity increases, you're not going to have enough oxygen to get all your energy, say, from just from fatty acids. And that's where you're going to have to, say, pull in from other sources. And that's where it comes to carbohydrates. So again, that's really kind of what we show with the testing, is that the way that we measure it is that you put the mask on, you measure the oxygen that you're breathing in, the carbon dioxide that you breathe out. And this ratio is the respiratory exchange ratio, shows us whether you're using carbs or fat. So 0.7 is you're using totally fat, 1 is purely carbohydrate. So again, as I've mentioned, if you're using more oxygen, you're using fat, that's why it comes out as 0.7. So it comes down to intensity. And when you talk about people become fat adapted, what you want to try and look at it here is you don't want to try and actively burn more fat. I don't know why this is I've put do not disturb.
I had the doorbell for the postman a minute ago. It actually happened.
People talk about becoming fat adapted. That shouldn't be the goal. The goal should be to get fitter. Because if you get fitter, you produce, sorry to get a bit sciencey, but you're going to produce more of these mitochondria, which essentially like your fuel cells in the muscle. And they can convert the oxygen into energy. So by getting fitter, you produce more mitochondria. So by having more mitochondria, you can take on more oxygen. And by taking on more oxygen, subsequently, you're going to burn more fatty acids. So you burn more fat by getting fitter, rather than thinking to myself, oh, I've got to eat more fat to burn more fat, because you burn what you eat. And if you want to lose weight, you've got to be in a calorie deficit. But if you start eating loads of butter and loads of coconut oil, yes, your fat oxidation rates or your usage of fatty acids is going to go up. But that's not body fat. That's just what's in the blood. That's just what's coming from your food. So just think to yourself, get fitter, because when you're in that calorie deficit, you're going to start burning more fatty acids from adipose tissue as well. And you're also going to burn more carbohydrates as well. So it's get fitter. That's what, the long and the short of it.
Yeah, it's a big part of our training that we do at Last 20 is really focused on athletic performance and getting that baseline. The same way people see it with your cardio, you get that baseline in first before you start doing the harder things. And if you haven't got there first, it means everything else you're going to do. So your skills training, everything else is just going to be much harder. But it's something you've got to have that foundation in there first. Absolutely. And as you say, the fitter you get, the more fat you're going to burn anyway. So if you do want to be dropping the fat and for rugby, get fit first, then start dropping the weight.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the chat so far. If you do want to find out more about sports conditioning, just message James on Instagram at L20_sportsconditioning. Now let's get back to it.
Absolutely. It's recovery as well, because people forget that even though you might do, say, high intensity exercise when you do, say, your rugby, you produce loads of lactate. So lactate's fine if you can clear it. But then the way that you clear it is through your aerobic system, or that kind of bottom end fitness with your basic endurance. So if you're more aerobically fit doing your low intensity work, that's the stuff that hooves up your lactate. So a lot of these guys who are really, say, some of your back rows and these Tom Currys, even though they're jacked and do loads of high intensity work, they're going to have an incredible baseline fitness as well. So like you say, you can't ignore the easy stuff.
Yeah. Can we test it at home, or do you need special kit for it?
You can indirectly test it at home, but you can't. You need special kit. Yeah.
What sort of things are we looking for? Obviously, we talk a lot about VO2 max improving that. What sort of things are you looking for, like lactate thresholds and things like that?
Yeah, so it's good. I think VO2 max, that's like your, I guess, your ceiling. That's how much oxygen you can actually take on a convert to energy. So that's, I guess, your, not lottery ticket, but that's your potential to be fit. And that really comes down to genetics, to be honest. And like when you look at these top cyclists, top swimmers, they will have just a genetically big VO2 max, but that doesn't necessarily equate to like strong performance. And that's when we look at something called your lactate threshold or your anaerobic threshold. And this is the point where you can just, when I spoke about lactate, this is the point where you can just about clear the lactate that you're producing. So it normally represents an intensity, so speed or power, that you can sustain for about 45 minutes to an hour. And people with a higher anaerobic threshold will tend to be a lot fitter. So if you can hold 300 watts on the bike for an hour, then obviously that's better than holding 250 watts. If you can run at 10 miles an hour, that's better than running at 8 miles an hour. So that's the other one. The other one is your aerobic threshold. So that's the point where you start producing carbohydrates. And if you know that point, you know when you start producing lactate. Again, you can do lactate. You can, if you want to do it at home, you can get a lactate monitor to do that. You know that a lot of your zone two and your easy work should be around this point. So when you've got these three points, that's when you can plot out your training zones. And the problem with, say, just using like FTP or just using like a ramp test is you're only estimating one of these points, and then all your other zones are going off it. Whereas the good thing about metabolic testing is that we can plot all the points and then actually accurately put your training zones, because someone might have the same FTP, again, this the power that you can hold for an hour in cycling, but they might have different VO2 maxes. So that's going to affect those training zones. So,
yeah, there's a lot we get from it.
Yeah, thanks for that. No, it's going to help a lot of people, I think, actually just knowing the difference and what we're looking for as coaches. So sometimes it can be quite hard to explain the reasons why it without getting too sciencey, but sometimes you just need that bit of science in there just to go, oh, okay, right, I understand that now, thank you.
And an easy way to take home from this, I can talk all the science, all the nonsense, but when it comes to, say, something like for fitness or for rugby, just when you do your easy work, make sure that you can breathe through your nose, and that's usually quite a good litmus test of like easy running or steady state running. And when you do your interval sessions, just making sure that you can't speak a sentence. And if you kind of use those as markers, you know that when you do your interval work, you can fucking blow it. Whereas when you're doing your easy work, you can breathe through your nose, and that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
Still by testing from mate.
We'll jump out the full science for now, just to let people digest that. I would go on something I've been looking into quite a lot this week, actually. I've been on, I don't know if you're on Clubhouse yet. We're doing some really good,
yeah,
really good chats on there, particularly looking into mental health of ex-professional players, and just in general the mental health of players at the moment. Well, we haven't been able to do these elite sports and team sports for the past year, especially at the amateur level. I think I've probably been to 7 or 8 rugby training sessions since last March, just because it's just been, there's been more on, but just with all the other things going on, I've just not been able to get there. So simply getting to the basics, looking at a baseline, what do we need to do with our food to make sure that our mental state is at a good place? We've spoken about not getting enough sleep, start affecting health. What food should we be looking at to make sure it's up, and to really to just to make sure that our mind's in the right place? What fuel does the brain use and stuff?
Yeah, and I think it's important not to, I don't want to come like it's, I'm gonna say it's out of my scope, but I'm not a dietitian. I'm not trying to say that if you eat broccoli you're gonna stop depression, but it's I think what we can just do is just making sure that we eat properly to put yourself in a better position to feel better. And there could be a lot of reasons for that. I don't want to say it's directly because of the nutrition, but again, I can post some links after this. Some studies where it actually looked at, there's a 12-week intervention where they looked at people with like anxiety and depressive symptoms. And just by doing like a nutrition intervention where they just can't drink more fruit and veg, it actually improved how they felt. Now, I'm not saying it's just down to that, but we do know that when you start eating better, you're going to have a bit more energy and you're going to feel better. You're going to perform better. And it has that knock-on effect. And also as well, you've probably got that like commonality between like obesity and depression, anxiety as well. So if you eat better, the likelihood of, well, you probably won't be as big. And then you've also reducing the risk of, say, something like anxiety, depression as well. So I think that's the big thing, is just eat properly, like look to eat healthy, eat your veg, eat your fruit, and don't overeat. I guess if you look at the specifics, you could look at, say, go down things like omega-3s and foods that are going to help protect the brain, potentially vitamin B12. Also as well, we know that glucose, that's kind of the fuel for the brain, something to think about, but then too much of it could be a problem. So it's not for me to go into the specifics. I think the important thing here is just like eat well.
Yeah, I think that is the main take point with all of it. It's as soon as you start feeling that energy dropping down, you start feeling like you're in a bad mood. Hangry is used quite often, and I've seen that with myself definitely. And you start getting really stressed and start really getting run down. And the second you have a little bit of something to eat, it just sorts it back out again. You've got that energy boost, and that instantly improves your mood, which can then lead to more things. If your moods improve whilst you're trying to work, you end up getting more work done anyway because you're not sat there getting stressed. And it just, then you feel better the next day because you've done more work. You can go to sleep better because you know you've done your work. It's just a chain reaction.
Absolutely. And I think it's more, I notice it a lot more when you train more. So sometimes I think at the start of the lockdown, I was maybe training, say, twice per week or three. You can kind of get away with not eating like really, really well. When you start really upping volume and up intensity, if you're not eating enough fruit and veg, if you're not sleeping properly, that's where you get the niggles and the tweaks, and that's where you feel a bit shit. And it's more that if you're eating very poorly, you don't really know what good feels like anymore. And that's where you do need that kind of big change to think, do you know what? I was feeling terrible. I didn't have any energy. No wonder my times were this bad.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on chocolate and sort of little quick hits when you need it? obviously, great. A lot of people sort of... We said about getting the good food and that will help the thing, but sometimes you do just need the chocolate bar and stuff. What do you recommend that as the quick hit? Would you say there's other things that you want to get in place so that you can have that nice little bit of chocolate every now and again?
I think it's like you've got to have your non-negotiable. So it's like hitting your fiber targets, hitting your protein targets, hitting your water targets, eating veg of every meal. If you do that, anything on top is not really going to make much of a difference. If it becomes a problem where you're overweight or you need to make weight for a fight, then that's going to be slightly different. I think it always comes down about to your goal. Like if you need to lose a few pounds, then you can get away with eating a lot more chocolate than someone who needs to lose 14 pounds in however many weeks to reach their featherweight way of their fight. So it's, you've got to think about your goal, but in general, chocolate's fine.
Yeah. There's a big split, isn't there, between sort of general pop and amateur athletes and those elite goals where you have got that competition coming up or you've got to be on weight. And yeah, with most of the guys I work with, I'm like, yeah, just have it, enjoy it. Because as soon as it starts becoming a hassle, you start thinking, oh, I'm not being allowed to eat that, I'm not doing this. You just start losing all of those that discipline that you've kept for so long. It's not so much motivation, because that's what gets you into it in the first place. You just start losing that discipline. And once that's gone, it's then hard to get back on it.
I think that's, but it's also, I think it does differ between people. Like some people do benefit more from that all or nothing approach. So it's, they say, because if they have like one square of chocolate, they have to eat the whole bar. So it might be a case where just don't buy it. And then if you do have that Saturday, yeah, I'm the same. If you do have that Saturday where you eat loads of shit, it's fine. Accept it, move on. Just make sure Sunday's okay. It's when it gets into that kind of 3-day cycle where you're still eating rubbish over and over again, that's when it's an issue. So find what works really.
Yeah, that's why I like using the plan, the tracking to start off with, because I can see it then and it means I get into that process. So if I do have that one day off, I'm like, no, I've done it for a month. That's the one day off, get back onto it now.
Yeah, that's it.
And having someone to keep you accountable as well, having a friend or a partner or just someone that's just on your back helps a lot, I find, with just keeping that accountability.
Absolutely. And then it's the same on the flip side, because I think my other half, she's not unhealthy, but she loves chocolate. She's, I can see now there's like, there's muffins on the side. It doesn't help, especially when I'm working in the kitchen. And, but then you've also got to ask, go back to that goal, like, does that one muffin really impact you that much? Probably not. If it becomes like an issue, that's where you might have to speak to your other half and say, listen, I'm trying to lose weight. This is becoming a health problem. We need to look at it together.
Yeah. I was going to jump into some strategies with mental wellness in a while, and I think that is one of them, that you are allowed to have your comfort foods, your cheat days and things like that. If you've got a set goal and your goal is to hit that, then it's on you. It's your discipline and to get to it. And it's only you to blame if you haven't got, if you've had that extra couple of muffins and not hit your goal. But in, especially with general life and general population, just have those cheat days. It's your goal is to be healthy and to keep living your life at what you want to do it. So one day isn't going to affect that in the long run.
Exactly. I think it's probably important as well not to call it just that, or recognizing it's not a cheat. It's fine to have the biscuit. It's not an issue. It's only an issue if if you think it's an issue. And so many people do that whole, right, because I've had a biscuit on a Friday night, the whole weekend's ruined. I'm going to eat shit for the whole weekend and start again on Monday. It's like, how does that make any sense? Just enjoy that glass of wine, enjoy going out for dinner, and just go for a run in the morning or something like that and just get back to normal.
Is there any sort of other strategies you've used then, jumping to the sort of mental health side, especially in lockdown, just to keep you positive and moving forward?
I think, again, I'm not an expert in this. That's not really, I guess, my scope. But I think with a lot of the clients that I use and I do as well, it's just that kind of reflection. So I don't like the whole happy clappy in the morning, tell yourself you're amazing. I don't think, for me, that doesn't really work. For me, it's more just writing down at the end of the day what's been good, what's been bad, and then what should I do better tomorrow. So it's just very quite factual that, yeah, I felt shit today, or I didn't do this, it was a bit stupid, just maybe do this instead, rather than paint that picture of like, yeah, I'm wonderful, talk to yourself in the mirror. I think you can do those affirmations, but I find just being quite logical about it, just reflect, just write it down, I find that helps.
Yeah, that's at the start of lockdown, it's one of the things I put into routines to get myself going, because I knew it was from doing events before, I knew I was going to be living completely different. I need to put some sort of thing in. So I've got that sort of end of the day review in there, look at what's done, why certain things haven't gone well, and what I can sort of remove. But in the morning, I just pop in, like, it's more of a productivity affirmation. Like, if I do this today, it's going to make tomorrow easier because I'm not stressing. It means I can have a day off at the weekend because I've got all of this done, been really productive.
What do you find works best then? What have you found that's been most helpful?
It's really just getting into this routine, having a routine in the morning, sort of getting the food in, getting the cold showers. And I usually do a couple of outdoor sessions at the moment, which helps get me up and going. And then, yeah, sort of afternoon works for work. And then, as you say, with the same sort of review process in the evening, just relaxing. It's just having that process there to get me through, because everything's been focused really not so much on my own personal training, because I sort of had an inkling rugby wasn't going to come back properly till next September anyway. Yeah. So yeah, it was really just sort of focusing on the business side, which is having those processes in, has helped me really push on. And it's made me a lot more positive because I'm achieving something every day, and because I'm seeing all of the goals starting to be ticked off. It's just put me in a much better mood, and that helps with training motivation and everything else.
I think that's a good point, Shea. I think you touched upon that. It's just having focus or having something to work towards, whether it's kind of business, whether it's nutrition, or whether it's kind of your sport. Like, again, going back to what I said right at the start, is I'm not a runner, but by saying to myself, right, I'm following and doing my VO2 max session, my threshold session, it's almost like that's your focus then. You want to get better. And that's what kind of, it gets you up in the morning to do it. And it's the same if you've got your business. It's like, well, I've got to do this. I've got to get through it. I've got to tick it off. And you feel better once you've done it, don't you?
Yeah, it's one of the books I read at the start of lockdown, Ikigai, which is a Japanese concept. It's basically the meaning of life. There is a post of it on the Instagram if anyone wants to jump up and have a look at that. But it's sort of based on like what you love, how you can help the world, how you can make money. I cannot remember the last one. But basically these four concepts, and they all cross over. So you can look at, maybe if the thing you love doing is working, then that works. It makes you the money and that's your goal in life. The thing you love doing is gardening, and you need to work to make some money for that, but you're still focusing on that one thing. That it doesn't have to be, you don't have to save the world. It's just what your meaning is and what you want to drive towards doing. The big thing in Japan, probably that people that live the longest out of any nation in the world, and they've always got that thing. Everyone has a garden that they work through, and they've got that. They don't really retire. They keep working in through to 100, 100, 110 years old just because they love doing it. It's just something to keep doing and have that purpose.
It's so true. I think that's sometimes the problem, like with nutrition coaching, is that everyone comes to say, "Yeah, I want to lose a bit of weight." And I know everyone bandies on about, "Oh, you're why," but it's so true. Like, you're not kind of dieting to lose weight. You're dieting so you feel a bit better. Or so, for me, it's attaching to the sport. Or for a lot of the clients, anyway, it's like, if you can lose this weight, you're going to be cycling a lot quicker, or you're going to be able to perform this much better. And if you can imagine yourself winning, or when you're on the rugby field and you're managing to go past people or through people because you're bigger, that can be that motivation to get your recovery shaking after your big session.
Yeah, it's looking at the difference on intrinsic and extrinsic, isn't it? If the motivation is for you and because you want to have that nice feeling and do things, then that often pushes you a lot further. If it's so that you can put a nice picture on the beach on Instagram in 4 weeks' time, then it works for some people and it's a good place to get started. But often the reward at the end of it is just you've got your 100 likes on your picture and that was that.
Yeah. I think that's so true as well. It's a tough one though, isn't it? I think even when you mature yourself and you're coaching people, yeah, everyone works so differently and it can be really difficult sometimes to find what makes them tick. And it's very easy to have that right plan. And with nutrition, it's so easy theoretically, right? You need to eat this, 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 and this, and this. But 8 out of 10 people aren't going to be able to do that because of work-life balance, because of motivation, because of like external factors. So it's finding that diet, which is, it's not a perfect diet, but it's a diet that works for them.
Obviously, lockdowns affected quite a lot of people's income and stuff. What's something you'd suggest for nutrition that can just help ease the worry on money? Because it can obviously get, if you're buying 10 chicken breasts every week to try and keep that up, you're doing all this, it can get quite a lot. And people either give up or let themselves get in a state where they're just worrying about it too much. Is there any tips you can give that to just make nutrition a bit cheaper, just make it a bit easier?
Yeah, I think people try and overcomplicate it. People often see healthy or a good diet as this kind of bodybuilding approach where you need that kind of 300 grams of protein, but you don't. And I think going more like a plant-based approach is absolutely fine. Like, you can get tins of chickpeas, beans, and lentils for like 30p from Asda, probably cheaper. So it's starting to understanding it and making the effort to learn how to build a balanced meal. So if you've, I've got to plug this actually, I haven't said it yet. Yeah, I've got the book, Following the Functional Athlete. It goes through like how to balance a meal. So have you got protein? Have you got carbohydrates? Have you got fruit or veg? Once you know how to put like a simple meal together, it can be really easy. In the morning, oats, again, you can probably get them for 50p. You've got whey protein. It might seem expensive to begin with, but you're talking about, 14p per serving. And you put like a handful of frozen berries in there. If you don't have that, get a banana. Fruit's more expensive, but vegetables are so cheap. So it's just like keeping things simple. Things like Aldi and Lidl now, you can get oats, beans, lentils, veg for nothing. So I think I'm not saying it's not an excuse, but you just need to, I guess, take the initiative and start understanding how to put the meals together. And then once you know how to put a meal together, there's no reason why you can't build a cheap one.
Yeah, I think everyone's so set on nice pictures on Instagram and recipe books that we sort of have forgotten how easy it is to knock off a really cheap meal that actually tastes really nice. I was working with one of the food companies that my friend runs yesterday. We're doing a few videos for the recipe packs we've got. So we've got a high protein meal pack and we've got a vegan meal pack. And they're sort of 20 minute meals that are really easy to make. It's 5-6 ingredients on some of them. And it's like a £1.50 a serving. And you're getting a full Chinese meal that you'd get out at a takeaway or a restaurant. And it's got all the nutrition you need. It's healthy. You have fun making it. So it doesn't have to be really expensive, and it also doesn't have to be boring either. You don't have to just bulk buy a load of frozen chicken and rice. You can actually have really nice meals and change it up. And I think I don't personally do it just because my evenings are usually quite full, but meal prep helps with that a lot because people don't have the time. So just dedicating some time on a Sunday to knock up some meals. You can use 4 ingredients to make 4 different types of meals in the same kit.
And that pick and mix approach is always quite good, that if you've got some sort of protein, different types of grains, so pasta, rice, potatoes, whatever it is, just have a bit of each. And you can make these different oils, and so you can put some, say, like chili and chili oil and do these different things, so just to change the flavor. And it doesn't have to be complicated, because people go on about, you need goji berries and you need all these different things. Like, you don't. You can have a tuna sandwich, or you can have, say, something like a ham sandwich. Look, don't get me wrong, ham might not be as good as, say, like grass-fed beef or whatever, but having some ham, some spinach on some wholemeal bread, there's nothing wrong with doing that. So don't get caught up in the whole, deliciously Ella on Instagram telling that you need these 15 ingredients from Whole Foods. It's nonsense.
Yeah, and you can split it up as well. You don't want to eat a ham sandwich every day. You also don't want to eat a grass-fed beef sandwich every day. So split it up. Some days you just have the ham sandwich. It's still going to get you nutrition in there. And then treat yourself on the other days when you've got some more time to get the nice ingredients in.
Exactly that, exactly.
Awesome stuff. So that tip was really good. But what's your number one tip for people that want to excel in athletic disciplines or sport? So not just the general sort of general health and fitness, but actually really want to push into being top of their level of the sport they play, or maybe push into the next level.
I think it's a really boring one, but you've got to be really consistent. So you have to show up. But I think with exercise, once a day for 45 minutes, potentially twice a day, three times a day for some professionals. But with it eating, it's got to be throughout the day. So you've just got to show up every single meal and snack all the time. And it doesn't have to be amazing, but you've just got to do things right all the time. I think be consistent.
Yeah. That's something you can put in at the start, isn't it? You look at those goals. When you do that consultation process of what you want to do, you need to look at, don't make something unrealistic that you can't stay consistent at. So yeah, I really like that one. It's something that people often miss. You miss those 3 days, or you start dropping off. I did it with the routine. I started dropping off a little bit and then noticed that I just was getting up in the morning feeling tired again. I was like, yes, because I'm not doing that routine, staying consistent with what I know. I've researched it already. I know this is going to help, and it has helped. I've proved it. But why am I not staying consistent with that? Just because that 1 week I got a bit bored and thought it wasn't doing anything. But in reality, I was just locked in my house, really bored.
That's why.
And it is quite hard to hold those up, but then it comes down to the inner motivation. Why do you want to do it? And if you want to be in the Olympics, if you want to be in Asia GB or something, you've got to put the work in.
Awesome stuff, man. Well, thank you for jumping on for this call. I just want to let you quickly, you popped the book up a minute ago. Do you just want to quickly grab that and just explain where we can get it from?
Yeah, I should do. Yeah, Fueling the Functional Athlete. I think I wrote this when I was doing my master's. It started off with taking a lot of the theory that it's easy to write about, but that's the first half of the book, whereas the second half is more just actually understanding how to implement it. So it's all well and good me telling you about mitochondrial biogenesis or something like that, but often it's knowing how to put a meal together which matters. So I think it takes the theory and then it actually puts it into a way that you can actually build your own diet. So just get it from the website Box Nutrition.
Nice. And where can we find you on socials?
I can't actually remember my, I think it's Box Nutrition UK or Box Underscore Nutrition. If you just search both of them and someone else might get a follow, I don't know.
So yeah, jump on there if you need to speak to Jack about anything nutrition-wise and metabolic testing as well. Hopefully you start doing that soon with the new regulations that are coming in. But yeah, thank you very much for coming on. It's been really informative. I know people have learned a lot from the nutrition side and also looking at that metabolic side of the things. So. Thank you for jumping on, and I'm sure we'll catch up very soon once we can start seeing each other in gyms and outside again.
Definitely. Thanks a lot for having me anyway.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for jumping on to the Coach in Your Corner podcast. If you found this useful, we'll be doing these every week, so please subscribe. And you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search Last 20 Sports Conditioning.